You're listening to Comics with Kenobi!
Well, hello, Jeff. It's episode number 70. How you doing? Geek me all-knowing box set. Stay open May 4th. I'm hoping you're gonna be hot as before. Cause Ren looks hardcore and I don't want Sith running the galaxy. I'm doing okay, Matt. What's that voice you're using there? You know something that the rest of us don't or probably do by now?
Lando for life, baby!
Yeah, I saw that they had announced that Billy Dee Williams is going to be appearing in episode 9. I'll be honest with you, I just hope he can remember his lines. The last few times I've seen him in public, he seemed very frail. And apparently he's started, you know, working out to ready himself for the rigors of shooting, so...
Well, I'm excited. I'm very happy about this. I mean, we're getting a double dose of Lando. We've had, you know, two miniseries, and now we've had him in Solo, a Star Wars story, and now we'll have him in episode 9. I'm very excited about all of this.
Me too.
I mean, this is just the greatest thing ever.
So. And then possibly we're going to have Carrie Russell in it as well. So that's
exactly Felicity
She's
herself.
A terrific actress, so. Yeah.
I just hope that she bakes pies and somehow manages to get Captain Mal to join us in episode 9 as well.
Let's hope she doesn't cut her hair.
She may do whatever she likes.
Yes,
so I'm excited. I'm excited that she's going to be in the film. I don't care who she plays. So I'm just glad that she's going to be in the film. It's going to be really cool. So, hey, man, pretty big week. Lots of news. I'm going to give everybody a heads up here. San Diego Comic-Con is coming up shortly. October solicits from Marvel should be out probably in the next week or so. We'll talk about more of that on the next episode. So we are now officially in that window of keep your ear to the ground for any new Star Wars comics announcements. Now, of course, Lucasfilm or Lucas Publishing has a panel at San Diego Comic-Con on, I believe it's on Friday, July 20th. So, you know, they've got an hour there and they, you know, got some as yet unnamed guests. So it would not surprise me in the least if there is a replacement to Poe Dameron as well as any new miniseries that could probably come then and there. No word yet, obviously, but I'm sure it's already been finalized. We're just, you know, have to wait to see who breaks it, whether it's StarWars.com or Marvel.com or some other partner. We'll
right.
find out.
Yeah. But yes, we will keep – you can follow the Comics with Kenobi Twitter for all the news that comes out from that. Matt is going to have his ear to the ground on that one, I'm sure.
We'll have to see. I'll be in Arizona. I may not have internet access, so it's going to be
– They don't have internet in Arizona?
Not where I'm going to be.
Oh, so. Okay.
We will see. We will see if I get a signal or not. If I get a signal and you see an announcement on the Twitter feed, then you'll know, yep, Matt's on vacation and he's got internet access.
So. Excellent.
We will definitely see. Also of note, Charles Soule tweeted out this week that he was writing Darth Vader number 22, which is part of the Vader's Fortress arc. And was talking about how he gets to revisit a certain character that appeared somewhat in the first Lando miniseries, which is kind of cool. Yeah. And this has got a lot of people buzzing, you know, because as he said, Fortress Vader Part 4, or, quote, the tale of Lord Momon, unquote. And he went on to say that he's had this story in mind since his Lando book with Alex Maleev and Paul Mounts back in 2015. And, nice little image of a robot head with burning red Sith eyes. So I'm going to suggest everybody go back and look at your copy of Lando and start speculating as to what it may be. But again, I like this because, you know, the Lando miniseries, we've had a lot of little Easter eggs that have popped up elsewhere. And of course, you know, considering that Charles wrote it, it makes perfect sense that this is going to be taking place on the Darth Vader series that he's writing.
Right, and it's a good excuse to go back and reread it because that was a wonderful series.
Exactly. Also, in comics news, Otis Frampton says that he is taking a break from Star Wars for now. You know, Otis, who we had on the show, he had the great Jawa story in Star Wars Adventures. He, you know, is really excited, you know, and very thrilled that he was able to get that. But he tweeted back on July 4th that he has decided to stop campaigning for the series in an active way. And has decided not to pitch any non-Jawa stories to IDW, something that he adds he was graciously invited to do. And I can confirm this. He and I chatted about this before and said that, yeah, you know, he had been invited to do some pitching. He says he's taking an indefinite break from the Star Wars fandom because, quote, my heart's just not in it anymore. The franchise and its fandom are a bit broken right now. There is anger and hostility and general negativity coming from fans and creators alike from all sides of every issue, and it's left me numb and dispirited, end quote. We're not going to get into the debate about this, but granted to say, suffice to say, we're going to miss him, and we're going to wish him the best, and we do hope that perhaps you know, he has some sort of awakening, and we'll come back, you know, whether or not, you know, if the fandom repairs itself, or if we are finally able to elevate ourselves as a fandom to something onto a higher plane. We will see.
And, you know, we actually had a, if I can promote another show, we actually had a discussion about that on this week's Geek Supreme about, in reference to Ahmed Best's revelation that came out last week about whether or not the state of fandom is going to start a drain on talent not wanting to work in the Star Wars universe. And this is sort of in, you know, sort of a result of that. So, I'm with you. I hope that we can start to be kinder to one another.
Yeah, I agree. I would like that a lot. But, of course, I mean, like I said, I don't want to get too deep into it because that is for other podcasts, not ours. And lastly, but not leastly, involving Star Wars comics news, we do have the June sales figures. And not as good as it could have been for June. As a matter of fact, no, not good at all, actually. for the first time that I can recall ever, there were no Star Wars comics in the top 25, and in this case, they barely cracked the top 30. According to Diamond's sales figures, and again, I'm air quoting sales, Darth Vader 17 came in at number 30, and then that was followed at number 31 by Star Wars number 49. Darth Vader number 17 just topped 50,000 copies. Thrawn number 5 was number 55. Dr. Aphra was at number 71. Actually moved up a couple of spots from the previous month. Lando Double or Nothing had a precipitous slide. Number 2 slid to number 76, whereas number 1 debuted at number 35 in May. And it only sold 26,957 copies, which is a damn shame because that is such a good book. Poe Dameron got a slight bump, I guess. It moved up to number 91 from number 96, yet still it only sold 23,102 copies. The Last Jedi number 3 was at number 107 with just 19,337 copies. And Star Wars Adventures number 11 was at number 170 with 11,376 copies, which is about average for Star Wars Adventures. So, but a little bit vexing, I won't lie, a little distressed, but also at the same time, June was a big month for new debuts. You mean Justice League number 1, Spider-Man number 1.
It's what I was about to ask. Weren't there a lot of
there were a lot
vying for attention?
Yeah, a lot of new number 1s that were vying for not only attention, but dollars. So, but we'll see how it goes. I mean, if it's any indication, you know, as we discussed Star Wars 50 tonight, which was a cracker jack of an issue, and of course The Last Jedi number 4, you know, we'll see if they can pull it out. It should be doable, I think. So that said, oh, and we will have later on the show a special chat. I think y'all are going to like this a lot. this is a lot of fun. The Legal Geeks at San Diego Comic-Con have two great panels about the law and, you know, and legal maneuvers within Star Wars, and they are going to hold a mock court-martial of Poe Dameron for his mutiny against Vice Admiral Holdo.
Outstanding.
Yeah, this is really cool. I really thought this was fun, and this caught my eye today, and I was just like, oh, this is just truly, utterly fascinating. So, and I was like, well, gosh, that would be so much fun. So I reached out to the Legal Geeks, I'm familiar with their work because, you know, they do a lot of good fun stuff. You know,
they do. I love those guys.
They are awesomeness. That is so true. But Josh is going to join us, and we might have he might have one of his fellow lawyers on here with us, and so we will talk briefly about Poe Dameron and his mutiny and what we can probably expect at the court martial. So
awesome.
Should be a lot of fun. Yeah, Josh Gilliland. Excuse me, not Josh Billiton. Josh Gilliland. I'm sorry. So there you go.
All right. Well, before that, let's talk about some comics. Let's start with, we have two books this week. We have Star Wars The Last Jedi number 4, and we have, as you mentioned, Star Wars number 50. So let's start with The Last Jedi number 4, because number 50 is going to require some
unpacking.
Yeah, some unpacking. Not that issue number 4 of The Last Jedi does not carry with it some weight of its own, starting with that cover, that beautiful cover we talked about last time.
Oh, yes.
Gorgeous.
That is gorgeous. That's Raza, you know, a Philly artist, that's Raza. Yeah, he's done the artist for the main cover. I did it again, Jeff. I broke the no variant cover rule, and I bought the Rod Rice Galactic Icons cover because it is of Amelyn Holdo holding her blaster, and in the background is the Resistance fleet going after the First Order Star Destroyer flotilla, and it was worth every penny.
Awesome.
So I was very, very happy to get a copy of it. But that's not to take away from Raz's covers, because I love his covers as well. As a matter of fact, I like Raz's covers so much that at the same, you know, when I bought The Last Jedi last week, I bought his, I believe it was, I think it was maybe, was it X-Force 20, I think it was? I'm not sure. But it's got this great cover of Domino and Sabretooth, and it looks really good. So, and of course, it was not a variant, thankfully. It was just a regular cover price, so I was very pleased.
Very nice.
But The Last Jedi number 4, of course, continues our six-part adaptation of the film. It is written by Gary Whitta. Art is by Michael Walsh. Colors by Mike Spicer. Letters are by VC's Travis Lanham. Assistant editor is Tom Groneman. And editor is Mark Paniccia. So the new team is in place.
Great.
This is the first book. And it opens up, on Ocho with Rey. And with Rey confronting Luke, going, "Is it true? Did you try to murder him?" I love Luke here. "Leave this island now." And, I like the colors on this. You know, Spicer has worked really well with Michael Walsh to capture the ambiance of the rain and the darkness of Ocho, and the frustration that Rey is feeling about not just Luke, but about Kylo Ren as well.
Absolutely. And it always struck me that Luke was being a bit of a baby in this scene, and because he just didn't want to answer the question. And they've captured that nicely here, and I like what they've done with the non-lightsaber battle that he and Rey engage in here.
Yes, yes. It's a battle of staffs, if you will.
Yes.
Until finally she ignites the saber. But you'll notice it's funny because she ignites the saber after he grabs her quarterstaff, throws it away, and then she summons the lightsaber to her.
Right.
And of course he slips back, and I like the lettering here, because as the saber is coming to Rey's hand, and then you see the little slip, just to denote that Luke is falling back.
He's falling backwards, right?
And this is where, Luke has his, epiphany, if you will. She says, "Tell me the truth." And he goes, "I saw darkness." And, it says.
And that panel at the bottom of 4 where he says, "I saw darkness," is just wonderful. The look of resignation on his face with the clouds in the background, it's just wonderful.
I like that a lot. And it continues, on to the confrontation between he and, at that time, Ben. I don't care. He's always been Solo to me. titles be damned. He has always been Solo to me. And, they do a nice job of encapsulating the fear on Ben's face and the terror and regret and instant, "Oh, my God, what have I done?" look on Luke's face.
Absolutely. It really is. It's amazing.
It is. And, it translates even further, where, he goes, "Look, the last thing I saw were the eyes of a frightened boy whose master had failed him."
And his face couldn't be more down than it is.
Yeah. And that really really captures just the loss that Luke is feeling and the guilt and the frustration, but more importantly, just the grief.
Grief. And I love the voiceover that we get from Luke as the Falcon is taking off. Where he's basically, he's basically saying, "Hey, this sounds familiar," because it is a replay of what happened on Dagobah in Return of the Jedi and in The Empire Strikes Back. And then we get the wonderful scene that nobody was expecting in the movie with Yoda. And it's so well presented here. It is as you would have expected it in the film. And I love that Luke says, "No more tonight. It all ends tonight." And yet I feel like what? Which again, nice callback to Empire there. And the and again the interaction between Luke and Yoda is wonderful. And at the very end, he says the, you know, the ever sort of the thesis statement of the film. Says Luke, "We are what they grow beyond. That is the true burden of all masters." And I love that they didn't Yoda that line up in the film or in the comic, and they just let it play straight and, you know, start to finish, because it's such an important sentiment, and I'm glad that they didn't Yoda it up.
And there was no need to Yoda it up.
Not at all.
And I like that they did that. And again, you know, props to the arts and the colors on this. Because, you know, that wonderful blue hue surrounds Yoda, yet it does not envelop him entirely, so he's not bathed in this blue wash. So, yeah, you know, we see Yoda.
That stuff always amazes me, because, again, I, you know, don't have an artistic bone in my body from that standpoint. And, it's just impeccable.
Yeah, and then, of course, you know, we cut from there to, you know, they're on board the stolen starship with DJ. That's Finn and Rose. You know, they're en route to the Resistance fleet into the Buck Rogers ripoff ship.
And again, you know, we've got a the same art style, but a change in tone.
Yes, very much so.
Which is great to let us know we're in a different place.
Yeah, and it's a little brighter because the interior is well lit. And then, you know, this is where we get the lay down, you know, of where, you know, look, DJ's going to work for you, but you got to pay him.
You got to pay him. And he takes the Hazian smelt.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And, you know, and one of the things I like here, the way Gary Witter wrote this is, you know, the way DJ kind of had that affectation of a stutter.
Mm-hmm.
He captured it, I thought, nicely without going overboard.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we did
a couple of times here and there, but doesn't define his dialogue.
No, it's like, guys, I want to help you, but no something, no doing. You know, then she tosses the pendant. Now I can help. And of course.
And I love on the next page, it's digital page 9, the very bottom panel where he says, he's talking to Finn and he says, "Live free, don't join." The look on Finn's face is wonderful, because that was Finn's motto up until this film.
It was, and which is now, and now Finn is having to wrestle with this notion of like, well, wait a minute, that's what I wanted to do, but now I'm part of something bigger. And reading this page, it, you know, made me go back and rewatch this portion of The Last Jedi on Netflix, even though I have it on Blu-ray and digital. But, you know, cause it's on Netflix, why not? I thought it conveyed the attitude of the film quite nicely, but it also, this added a little more panache to it, you know, especially with the way Finn looks. And again, you know, because I like how Michael Walsh, he is not doing Happy Valley to these characters. He's not making them photorealistic.
No, not at all.
You know, you can tell who they are, but he's doing it in his own style.
Right.
You know, and I will even go so far as to say on that bottom panel, DJ kind of looks like Jughead.
So, I'll buy that. Yeah.
But, you know, just, you know, not enough to take me out, but you know, I could just, you know, give him a hamburger
right.
And you know, add some crowns to that cap of his, and
exactly.
He's definitely going to be running the chocolate shop over on Canto Bight anytime soon.
I can see
so,
that.
So, but, you know, it was a nice way, and they did a nice job, I think, of, you know, of maintaining the pace of the film here in a truncated way. And, of course, that's where we pop over to
the Resistance fleet. And Poe is bowing up to Holdo. And I love, we talked about it before, I love the way Holdo is drawn. And they captured the purple of her hair perfectly.
Oh, yeah, with the lavender.
It doesn't look unnatural.
Is that purple or lavender?
We don't have Taylor here to tell us the exact hue. So
okay.
I'm going to go with lavender works.
Okay.
It's got a little more pink in it than purple, so yeah, lavender works. It's almost lilac, but not quite lavender. I'm going to ask him the next when I talk to him tomorrow, and when we come back, I'll know exactly what hue that color is.
Okay.
But I love the way this is drawn, and I love the way it's laid out, and especially when we get to Digital 11, the very top panel, she says, "Get this man off my bridge." And the reverse of that is Poe looking just as defiant as she is, and so you've got these two sort of immovable objects colliding.
Exactly. Yeah, you have an immovable object and an unstoppable force. So nothing is going to give.
Right.
So, and of course, we have this great segue of, you know, Finn and Rose and DJ popping out of hyperspace. You know, and of course, you know, Finn radios back in, "Look, Poe, we're on our way. What's your status?" You know, Poe gives him the laydown. you know, it's all horrible, and he's like, "Well," Finn's like, "Well, we found a codebreaker." So
we found a codebreaker. Yeah.
So, you know, just, you know, Poe, just, we can do this, just buy us a little more time. And of course, this is you know, where it sets up for our mutiny. And of course, then we shift again to Rey aboard the Falcon, and now it looks like we see her putting the Jedi texts into the drawer.
which we didn't see in the film.
No. I mean, we saw a glimpse of them at the end of the film.
Right, but so, we didn't see her actually storing them. I don't believe.
Yeah, which was kind of cool. So, and of course, you know, she's getting into, I guess, the escape vault.
Yeah.
Escape pod, yeah. You know, and she is, you know, and out she goes. And then,
I just want to say this book is allowing me to confirm just how much I love what the filmmakers did with this film.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's still a divisive entry in the saga, but I think it's going to age better than people think it is.
I think you're right.
Because of things like this. I feel like in 20 years, people are going to revisit this and realize, oh, we were wrong.
Yep. You are exactly right.
But I like, again, we're getting a faster cuts between storylines now, like you do in Star Wars. And I love, you know, how this next page, the digital page 13, you got three panels that with no dialogue, but it tells you the entire story.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got DJ, Finn, and Rose cloaking for approach. So they're all going toward the same location. They slip through, and then we have Poe's mutiny, which we're going to talk more about here in just a little bit. And I love the way the mutiny is portrayed here, because especially the panel in the middle where he says, "I'm relieving you of command." They're just also defiant in their faces, except for what is the character's name that Billy Lord played?
Lieutenant Connix.
Yeah, she looks like she's still not quite sure, but she's following his lead.
Yes, she is. And of course, I love Holdo's defiance. You know, I hope you know what you're doing. And of course, Poe is. Yeah, me too. I'll be on the bridge. If they move, stun them.
Right.
And then of course this is where we do the nice job of cutting back and forth, you know, between the events in the Resistance fleet and aboard the Supremacy. You know, we've got the Rose, Finn, and DJ. You know, they've invaded the larder, the laundry room of the First Order, and they've masked BB-8 with a garbage can, and you know, we see the evil BB-8 unit kind of, you know, broop broop broop. And nice job with the lettering there, I thought.
Yes, very nice.
And again, they pace this nicely because they get all the way up to where they need to go. And of course, you know, DJ does his magic with, you know, Hazian Smelt, best conductor. Thanks for the loan. And I like the look on Rose's face here when he throws it back to her.
Yeah.
So, and of course, now it's like, nice. let's go. And, you know, of course, Ben radios, you know, Poe, we're almost there. We're real close. Prep the cruiser for light speed. And yeah.
Yeah, and we know what's going to happen next. And again, the next page is digital page 17. When Holdo gets the drop on the mutineers,
mm-hmm.
that panel of her face.
She's not happy.
Yeah, she is angry, and I love it. It is wonderful. And I love, again, we get that. This issue covers a lot of ground. Because in the very next page, our heroes get in and then get dropped upon by the stormtroopers, including Phasma. And I love that she says, "So good to have you back." Then we go back to the fleet, and Poe is trying to get in touch with Finn, and you get a crackoom explosion, and then Leia appears. And then she says, "Captain Dameron." And didn't we talk last issue about the fact that they were calling him Captain when he had been demoted to Commander?
Yes, however... it was pointed out to me that in the Resistance, it's reversed. Commander is a higher rank than Captain.
Okay, so he was demoted from Commander to Captain.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, got it. I didn't know one way or the other. I just thought
that
I remembered.
Oh gosh, I'm blanking on the young chap who who pointed that out. Oh gosh, I'm sorry, dude. I have your name just vanished out of my head.
You know who you are.
You know who you are, and you know that I lauded you for the explanation and the update on that. So thanks for that, belatedly.
Okay. And so so on the next page we've got they're loading Poe onto the ship, and Holdo and Leia are talking about how much they like him because he is who he says he is, and they have their departure. And
I
love the way that's handled here. You got a two shot of them, then a one shot of Leia, then a two shot of them again. And then the shot of Leia looking out of the ship, the escape pod as it's leaving is just wonderful. And from there, we cut to the ship with Ben taking Rey to see Snoke. And I love the way this is done. Now, does Kylo in this scene, does he say, tell Rey that he saw who her parents are? I don't remember that in the film.
I don't think so. I thought that was part of their forced conduit conversation when she was still in Ajito. We'll have to rewatch it.
And see. I don't believe he tells him that here because, again, the look on her face as the door opens behind her is perfect after what he's just told her. Yeah. And I have to say, this last page, A, it's a great reveal, and Snoke is perfect.
The drawing,
the inks, the colors, everything is perfect. Looks better than he does in the film.
He does, and the menace is just perfect. Yes, young Rey, welcome.
And again, the look on her face, you know, she is terrified, but she's not wanting to show it.
Yep.
And yeah, he's just perfect. And great pacing in this book. Like I said, they covered a lot of ground. And the next issue, if the cover can be believed, we're going to get to see the fight with the Praetorian Guards, which is my favorite sequence in the film.
Yep, mine too. And I love this Raylo cover. It's the best.
Yes, it is. It's wonderful. And again, almost photorealistic, but not quite Uncanny Valley.
I believe that's Paolo Rivera.
Okay,
who drew that cover?
Well, it's wonderful. So that's again, if you're not reading this, or you want to wait for the trade. I understand, but definitely pick this up because it adds to my enjoyment of the film. This adaptation really does. So the only other book we have this week is plenty of book for one week. Star Wars number 50. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. First off, the cover. We talked about the cover a little bit last time. When we discussed issue number 49, this cover is a work of art. It is amazing. It is frameable.
It is. This is by Travis Charest. I mean, and this, of course, you know, issue 50 is always a landmark issue for any series. Star Wars is the same thing. And there were some amazing variant covers for this one. I did not break my rule for variants on this one, but, I mean, you know, there was some great with John Tyler. Christopher had one. Terry and Rachel Dodson had a beautiful one. Of course, you know, Terry and Rachel Dodson, they did the artwork for the Princess Leia miniseries. David Marquez, who has done those really amazing covers as well for Star Wars. Phil Noto had a great variant showing Luke Skywalker in his X-Wing flight suit. And of course, Rod Rice had a variant cover as well. And this issue, it's a landmark issue. You know, this is issue 50 of Star Wars. This is the first, you know, when Marvel got the license back. This is the first Marvel Star Wars comic in the modern era to reach issue number 50. And I mean, at the pace it's going, I think we're going to easily surpass the 107 issues of Star Wars Volume 1 that Marvel did. But in addition to being issue 50, this was the start of a new story arc. It's called Hope Dies, and this is essentially leading us into the setup for the events of The Empire Strikes Back. I mean, not directly and not immediately, but this is setting us down that path. And wow. I mean, Kieran Gillen did an amazing job writing the story. Salvador La Roca, of course, handled the art as he has for the last several issues. There's, of course, a backup story, which added more pages to the book, and that was also written by Kieran, but it was done by Giuseppe Camuncoli, who draws Darth Vader. The colors were by Guru EFX, letters by VC's Clayton Coles, Tom Groneman, of course, assistant editor, and Mark Paniccia as the editor, and this is pretty impressive. I mean,
Up at the end of the last story arc where Mon Cala has been in open revolt, and we learned in the last episode or last issue that Trios has basically sort of given the rebellion what they need to build their own fleet, but at the same time she's double crossing them.
Yeah, it's massive spoiler. She is massively double crossing them. She is. I don't even want to say she's a double agent. I mean, she's still working hardcore for the Empire, and more importantly, she is doing Vader's bidding.
She is, and
it was Kieran fooled me on this one. I got to admit, you know, because you know, based on what happened in the last couple of issues, I really thought that she was up on the level. You know, that she was really trying to work from within to help aid the rebellion. And we found out too late that that's not the case. And more importantly, the Rebel Alliance, with that brand spanking new fleet, with all those amazing vessels that they pulled out of Mon Cala at such great cost, found out as well. And, you know, it starts with this opening. And, you know,
this you first page is as stunning as the cover to me.
You can criticize Salvador La Roca for the way he draws some of the faces in these comics. You cannot justifiably criticize his ability to draw fleets, spacescapes, starscapes, planetscapes, sunscapes.
This is absolutely gorgeous. And the you get two panels of glasses going together and clinking, and then the liquid flowing out. It is wonderful.
It looks like, you know, the plasma of a sun in these glasses.
It does.
You know, and it's seamless, and then that's how we open up onto to Mako Ta, Rebel Base. And I like this, you know, with Mon Mothma, your father would be proud of you, Leia. And, you know, clearly, you know, we're celebrating, and we see some familiar faces in that first panel. I mean, we see General Draven from Rogue One down in the lower right hand corner.
Yep.
For example. And then, you know, this is a lot of this is the party. The for the first time in a long time, the Rebel Alliance has got something to celebrate. And of course, Queen Trios is there. And it's funny because Queen Trios kind of looks like she's the odd one out, you know, and, you know, she.
And Leia, you know, ever the, and Leia feels the great host is. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she's also, I think she's also feeling that royal obligation as well, you know, because they're both royalty. So, and I love this line, you know. You know, thank you, Mon. I probably should go and make sure Queen Trios is comfortable. I did promise her a pleasant evening. She's done so much to get us here, too. And Mon Mothma here is, oh, Leia, I've embarrassed you with a direct compliment. I suspect tonight will be a trying night for you. Everyone wants to meet you. And she's right, you know, because Leia is, despite her very public persona, and, you know, and her aspect as the face of the rebellion, she is very much a behind-the-scenes person. You know, she likes the machinations of making the Alliance run. And, you know, these, I think she views these social obligations literally as that, just obligations.
Obligations, exactly. So she goes to talk to Trios, and Trios flatters her pretty openly. And Leia, in true Leia fashion, insists that, you know, she can't really take credit for anything because it is... the rebellion is truly a group effort, and I love that about her. That's the mark of a true leader, you know.
Very much so. She is not about personal gain. She is about the public gain.
And especially after, and I love the after this double truck where, you know, of the fleet, when Trio says you did this, and it's after that that Leia, you know, goes on to say, no, this was a group effort. We're in this together, and that's, I love that. That's just sort of her. That's her. I think that's her defining statement, is we're in this together.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Han is out somewhere in the Outer Rim on the Ring of Kefreen trying to make a deal for something. We don't really know what.
Yay, I love we get another Ring of Kefreen reference here from Rogue One. So.
And he's using C-3PO as an interpreter and trying to make a deal. They make a deal. Chewie shows up and says they need to leave because there are bounty hunters there who are after him because Jabba has put a bounty out on his head. And we get a Zabrak and what is their species called?
Those are Grands, are they not?
Gand? Yeah. Grand?
Grand. Grand.
G-R-A-N. You're right.
Yeah, Grands from Malastar.
Gand is Zuckus. / yes. Forlom. Got it. And of course, Han gets the drop on him. My droid will look after your weapons. Tell Jabba I'm good for it. He'll get the money, I swear. And, you know, they take off. And we got a contact who will pay credit for this prime collection of fresh transponder codes. And Chewie says, he says something, and John goes, oh, yeah, Luke's thing. Yeah, you got me. I'd have liked to have seen that, too. And what is Luke's thing? Oh, Luke has prepared a flying display, sort of like the...
they're skywriting.
The Blue Angels, is that what they're called?
Yeah, except they're doing a skywriting, you know. I guess, you know, the way planes do it with smoke here on Earth, you know, they're just doing it, I guess, what looks
plasma
like light
or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it looks really cool. It's just, it looks really impressive. That's some really good flying, too.
It really is. And I love that Mon Mothma says, begin the commencement. And we realize, oh, the commencement is the scattering of the fleet.
Mm-hmm.
And they make a point of saying, I've never seen so many rebels in one place. And they said, well, that's why we have to separate.
Exactly. You don't want them all taken out at once. And that right there should send a really brilliant red flag.
Yeah.
So
that couldn't possibly be foreshadowing at all. So they call him, and we count off to all the subgroups, and we have Alpha Group, which is being led by, I assume that's Admiral Akbar.
Uh-huh.
Beta Group, I'm not sure who that is.
Yeah, Gamma Group is clearly Hera.
Is Hera, that's what I was wondering about. And then Delta Group is being led by someone who looks like a little bit like John Turturro in a blonde wig.
Yeah, you're right.
I would be
right.
Fine with that if it was. And and Leia says, okay, the fleet is ready. And so, you know, Mon Mothma goes to make her speech. And she says, of course, the Rebel Alliance is stronger than ever. And General Dodonna says to all groups, dispersal, hyperspace, now. So they all go to hyperspace, and...
click.
Hyperspace, I tried, sir, nothing. And Mon Mothma says, the delay has somewhat diminished the grandeur of the moment. Like, well, maybe you don't want to worry about the moment. Worry that your ships aren't going to hyperspace. And Leia says, is there a problem? General Dodonna, is there a problem? Nothing. Leia to anyone, is there a problem?
Yeah, there are a lot of different systems interacting. Of course, Leia's like, no, we talked about this with Trios. Trios, is there anything we could have missed? And it dawns upon her.
Yeah, she's not around.
Yeah, and Draven...
during the speech.
And then that's when it dawns upon Leia, because we have Akbar, or if it's not Akbar, somebody else, you know, another Mon Cala. You know, General Dodonna, multiple hyperspace signals incoming. And we see Leia at the bottom panel. This is a
trap. And oh, and my then, cow, page 19, that art is horrendously good.
It's just, it's astonishing.
It was breathtaking. I turned the page and it really was breathtaking. Sort of made my stomach drop too, as well, because you realize you got three Star Destroyers and what looks like the Super Star Destroyer.
That looks like the Executrix, does it not?
Which they make reference to later. The Executor is there. Vader's flagship.
Executor, not Executrix. Excuse me, the Executor. So, which when I was a kid, I always thought it was the Executor.
You know, it's weird. I never looked at it that way. Everybody I know did, but I never looked at it that way. I don't know why I inherently knew that word was Executor. And because Executor would make more sense.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a little more impressive. But I love this exchange that Vader has. He says, I sense their fear. It is insufficient. Give them time to understand. And again, I love the colors on this, that he's looking out through. I guess it's like a red. There's like a red wash over the window that he's looking out at. And the bay doors are locked so no fighters can launch.
But before we get into that, the dialogue here with Luke, I haven't seen anything that big since the Death Star, Vader. It has to be. And, of course, that's when they send the alarm, all fighters launch now. And then this is great. Launch pattern's cleared, and no. R2, don't worry, R2, it's going to be fine. Wait, stop! What? Aborting launch. The bay doors won't respond, so they're all trapped.
And I don't know about you, Matt, but do you start backing out of the garage before the door is completely up?
My garage is filled with my workbench and my workplace and all my power tools. So
have you ever backed out of a garage when the door was not completely up, though?
One time. Just one time.
And how
we
did
don't
that
speak,
work for
we
you?
Don't
okay,
speak of it
that's
anymore.
That's what I thought, yeah. they found out the bay doors are sealed. Comms are down. Artillery batteries are down. Hyperspace and propulsion engines are down. And now we're unable to launch fighters.
And this line from Dodonna.
All
oh, my
work,
God.
All the effort, all for what? To become target practice. And that image of him is just heartbreaking. He is his heart has sunk.
And Vader then, knows it. Vader can sense it. And I love that line, better.
Oh, he's such an a-hole.
The nearest cruiser, destroy it.
This is the Vader that we all know and loathe, slash love.
Yes. And then I love how they combine the firepower, you know, of the Executor and the other Star Destroyer. And it, you know, there's no Death Star. You have to remember. I mean, the other Death Star 2 is being built, but it's not yet fully operational. So this is the Empire's new way of dealing with massive threats. The combined force of Star Destroyers. I mean, they can do, you know, a Star Destroyer has always been able to do planetary bombardment. But when you get a Star Destroyer the size of the Executor and in tandem with these other Star Destroyers, they are literally unstoppable.
And they absolutely destroy Willard's ship before anybody can do anything.
Not a thing. Well, there's nothing they can do. And they watch it. They watch in horror. of, you know, they watch in horror as it's destroyed. And we see that because, you know, we see Willard, you know, Shields, all power to Shields. You know, there's not enough. We're losing them. Quickly abandon ship. And he realized, I mean, he just knows that may the force be with us all. Oh. And that's it.
And that next page, it's digital page 26. I love that. It's a wordless page. It's a double truck splash page with the ship being destroyed. And you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 insets of the main characters' reactions. You've got Leia, Luke, Mon Mothma, I'm assuming maybe Wedge.
I think that's Wedge, General Dodonna,
and
General Draven. And you don't need any dialogue for this page. The way Salva has drawn those faces has captured the essence of the horror and the loathing and the fear and the resignation that they're all feeling. This is the faces of people who know they are about to die.
And then the next page is also perfect because it's wordless for the first three of the four panels. You see Trios walking away. You see her take a drink. You see her drop the glass. Then you see just her shadow as she's walking away, and she says, "And I did this." And I don't know how she feels about it. I feel like she regrets it at this point. I feel like she respects Leia, and I feel like she maybe regrets it. But
no,
who's to say? You don't think so?
No, that's what we're meant to think.
Well, and I think that's backed up by the backup story.
No, I don't think it is. We'll see. I think the backup story directly contravenes what you're saying.
I mean, I think it backs up what you're saying. I mean,
so, oh, okay, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and again, this dialogue. I mean, this is sparse yet totally effective dialogue from Kieran Gillen. You know, just, you know, the outset, you know, of Vader. We never even really see the front of his face.
No.
Now they understand. I feel their terror. Most satisfactory. The next target, my lord. And what a wonderful play, you know, because all through, you know, Rogue One and all through this series, we've had Leia talking about hope. How hope is going to drive this rebellion, how hope is going to propel this small band of freedom fighters against such tall odds. And Vader is straight up targeting hope.
Hope dies is what we have on the last page. And we finally do see the front of his mask, but we see it as a reflection while he watches the destruction. And this, again, say what you want about Roroka's faces. This is wonderful. Everything, the art, the inks, the color, everything on this page is perfect.
Everything combines really beautifully. And then, of course, we get a nice little inset of a cover gallery of the first 50 issues.
That was a nice little bonus, yeah.
It was. I liked the little letter from assistant editor Tom Groneman.
Read it, and he says, we have another story waiting for you, and it's just one page away. And I was like, oh, wait, what? I turned the page. Oh.
Yeah, my only call out is I wish he had spelled Wookiee correctly, and I wish he had spelled Sherwook correctly.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
It's a small thing, but...
It's not a small thing.
But, you know, here's the thing. He'll never make that mistake again.
He does call himself Padawan Learner Tom. So.
Exactly. Well, and he will learn from this mistake. I know he will.
Because I'm sure more than us have brought it to his attention.
Oh, yes. I'm confident about that. But, again, it was nice seeing the cover gallery again. That was really refreshing. And then, of course, that's where it leads into... the nice little bonus feature here. And of course, this was written again by Kieran Gillen. And this one, like I said, was penciled by Giuseppe Camuncoli with inks by Cam Smith and colors by Java Tartaglia. Clayton Coles did the letters. And of course, Tom Groneman, assistant editor, Mark Panicia, editor. And this was a nice little, I don't want to say it was an epilogue, but it was a nice little way to set us up with what we just read in Hope Dies. And it's called Shutoran Lives. And
and it picks up on Mustafar, Vader's castle that we were promised decades ago, and I was so happy that we finally got that in Rogue One, and that we're going back to it. I love the way this looks. Yeah, months ago. And so he says, "You come to me with excuses, Admiral Ozzel. Share them." And that's never what you want to hear. And so Admiral Ozzel is complaining that the rebels are hard to catch. And is it, I think it's General Veers is with
Yay!
Him.
Yay! And, I'm so happy for Veers Watch. They finally got General Veers in the comics.
Right.
He's got an action figure. He's got a Black Series 6-inch action figure, and now he's in the comics.
Outstanding. Well-deserved. And he says, at the least, we need more strength. Your death squadron must be brought to bear immediately. It's ludicrous for us to keep it. And Vader just says, ludicrous? Lord Vader, I meant no disrespect. And he goes, what you meant is of no interest to me.
Man, Vader is just cold.
And, you know, ever the Imperial officer, Veers takes a moment to say, you're mistaken. They're not vermin, they're weeds. Alas, we are the storm. And is he explaining things with a weak nature metaphor? I'm not really sure that it works.
He is, because see, this is what I like about Veers. Ozzel is very much of the mind of his superiority, of the Empire's superiority. And that's why he's saying, you know, look, the rebel are vermin. But see, Veers, he's a strategist. And he knows what's going on. That's why he says, you know, as he says, you know, they're not vermin, they're weeds. Alas, we are the storm. And when the storm blows, weeds bend. When the storm passes, they're unharmed. If the rebellion were a tree, it'd be different, because a tree would be blown over. I mean, it happens all the time here where I live. You know, a good strong storm comes through, you know, lights are out, roads are blocked because all these trees get knocked over. And, you know, and Veers is exactly right. You know, until then, they will continue to slip through our fingers. And he lays it out, you know. And this is, and of course, that's a nice callback to A New Hope, you know, with Tarkin. You know, and this is, and I like how Cam Smith and Giuseppe Kevin Coley draw this. You know, they have Tarkin. No star system will dare to oppose the Emperor now. The more you tighten your grip, Tarkin, the more star systems will slip through your fingers. And Vader realizes, you know, he's calling back, and he goes, huh. And of course, Ozzel realizes, ah, nuts. Lord Vader, General Veers makes an interesting point. This is what we shall do. And that's what takes us back to Shutoran. Because he knows he's got to get with inside the rebellion, plant the mole, spread the herbicide that will kill the weeds. And Queen Trios is delivering the herbicide. Or herbicide, I should say.
Queen Trios is the Orkin man, is what we're learning.
She is.
And, yeah, so he goes to Shutoran, and he tells Trios of his plan, which we had then seen her carry out in the main story. So it really is sort of... I think, honestly, I feel like this entire story was in there to reinforce how we were supposed to feel about her exit in the main book.
I think it was, and if you look at it, you know, because when the initial solicits came out, this story was not included as a part of it. It was a couple of weeks afterward that the book was not re-solicited, but, you know, Marvel let it be known that they were adding Kevin Coley to the art, and so that automatically right there was a sign that there was going to be a backup story. So it may have been just an editorial decision. Well, you know, look, let's reinforce it. But, you know, we've already got this, you know, the prime of story has already been laid down. So let's bolster it with a backup story.
And I'm glad that they did, because, again, I think this is great. Again, the art on this in this is wonderful. And so they lay everything out. And, of course, she has to sort of prove her loyalty to him. She takes out one of her own guards, who goes after Vader when he threatens her. And she says, Lord Vader is an honored guest. He can do anything he wishes. and whoever her guest says, Queen Trios, his family will be outraged. She goes, you don't understand. Vader would have likely killed you all. Vader looks at her. She goes, oh, I'm a fool. Lord Vader, please, be my guest. And we see him igniting his saber, and she just says, no witnesses, yes. And Vader says, I trust they were expendable. And she says, Lord Vader, as long as Shutoran lives, everyone is expendable. And I just wrote in my notes, damn.
Well, you know, she is willing to protect her people and her fiefdom at great lengths. And, you know, if she has to betray, I mean, she and Leia are not tight yet. They're not best buds. So, but, you know, I mean, Trios is having to look out for herself and for her people. So she is having to make those big decisions. Because, you know, it's all it takes, you know, is for her to get on the wrong side of Vader, and the Imperials will come and reoccupy Shutoran and take it over, and no one will survive.
Right.
So, but I like, you know, I do like how Kieran, you know, through Vader, explains what's going on and how this happens. So, I mean, so she is, you know, he essentially says, you know, the Empire requires your specialists to mine the ruins of Jedha. So that sets up, basically, the beginning of Kieran Gillen's start on the main Star Wars title with issue, what, 38, I think it was, or 30, yeah, 38.
Sounds right.
You know, with the Ashes of Jedha arc. So, you know, and it goes, and he goes on to say, you know, you'll supply the information to the rebels, and it must be sufficient to entirely sabotage our efforts. In other words, he's saying, make it legitimate, do it, sabotage it. We'll be ready for you. Don't worry. Yeah, then and it's, this is psychological warfare, because he's got the rebels there for a fleeting instant. They had their fleet. They had hope, and now he is there, and he is prepared to just burn hope into cinder.
And she is prepared to help. And it's going to get dark. If you thought the last story arc was dark, it's like we haven't seen anything yet. And in Hope Dies Part 2, I love that we get the covers for 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Yes.
And I especially love, I'm looking forward to number 53, because we see that looks like Han in an X-Wing.
It does, doesn't it?
Flight
he's,
suit.
He's in so. An X-Wing flight suit getting into what looks to be an X-Wing.
I can't say enough good things about this issue. This is the strongest one we've had in a long time, and I'm very anxious to see where this is going to go and how the rebels are going to get out of this, because I trust that they will.
But yet remember though, we are entering into a time of great uncertainty for the rebellion. I mean, like I said, this is going to lead us into The Empire Strikes Back. You know, and they're on that ice ball of Hoth. They're still trying to recover. You know, they're still, they're smaller than they have ever been before. And that's what has me really genuinely excited about the story arc, because it's going to break a lot of new ground for us as Star Wars fans, as fans of the original trilogy. I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of stuff that's going to really surprise us.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
And welcome to a very special part of the podcast. As everyone out there knows, we are big fans of Poe Dameron, the comic book, and we love Poe Dameron, the character. And one of the things we really found fascinating about The Last Jedi was how Poe straight up mutinied against Vice Admiral Holdo when General Organa was indisposed. And I got to admit, I did not see that coming, because, Poe has spent his life as a military pilot, so one would think that he would have a very healthy respect for the chain of command, yet he did not do so, which is very intriguing, and I think it struck a nerve, because we have Josh Gilliland, who is part of The Legal Geeks, which I recommend. They have an awesome podcast and an even better website, and you should check them out, because they do a great job of making the law accessible even to people like Jeff.
Yes, and I will say I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of the work you guys do, but just because I love real-world applications of the silly stuff that we all read and watch in the movies. So,
thank you. That's very kind. We have a ton of fun with it. It's my creative outlet. Some people paint or play a musical instrument. I blog about geeky issues from Star Wars and other pop culture properties.
I don't think that's a bad thing at all.
Not at all.
Well, and this mock trial, Josh, it's one of what, three things that you all are doing at San Diego Comic-Con this year, are you not?
This is correct. So we are, this is our biggest year going to Comic-Con to date. So it's number four for us. And on Friday at Comic-Con is Star Wars Day. So in room 7A, all day long, they have awesome Star Wars panels. And in prior years, the guys from Hasbro have been there showing how they make the toys with vector diagrams of Black Series, and they preview what's going to be coming out, and everyone cheers. They also had a gentleman who did the marketing for A New Hope, except it was just called Star Wars, and then Empire Strikes Back, and he brought all kinds of awesome pictures and behind the scenes material and talked about the 800 numbers that they had. So it's it's like all day long, and ends with a trivia contest, and it's geek heaven for Star Wars fans. We pitched several panels, and we got two Star Wars panels that are in the Friday lineup.
Nice.
So we're just like stunned and honored, and we're going to do our best to make it as fun as possible. The first is at 3:00, and it's judges on the law of The Last Jedi and Solo. And last year we did the judges on Star Wars. And that year we had one of the justices from the California Supreme Court, who's a huge Star Wars fan, and John Owens, who is a circuit judge with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Well, this year, Owens is back, in addition to Magistrate Judge Stacey Beckerman from Portland, Mitch Debbin, who is in San Diego, great on E-Discovery, and he's also doing the Poe mock trial as well. We have from New York, Matthew Sherino, who is probably the most hardcore Star Wars fan that I know. His chambers are fully decorated with toys that he's collected his entire life. His robing room, which is outside his courtroom, has posters and other swag up. He's like a kid in a candy store, excited to come out for this, and it's going to be a ton of fun to have him there. And Judge Carol Nahara, who, as a DA, prosecuted the Menendez brothers.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Big guns.
She's awesome. So she's bringing four of her judge friends to the show. Which is just neat to have all of these, you know, legal minds coming together.
Josh, this is officially the coolest thing that has ever happened in the history of anything. I just have to say, oh my cow.
I don't know if it's that good. I mean,
like, oh, you guys, no, trust me, it is.
I mean, like, birth of a child. I mean, like, are you sure?
I don't have any kids.
Okay, well, all right, well, then. Okay, we'll give you that. We're totally excited. You know, when I think back over my legal career, the fact that, you know, going to Comic-Con with high-powered judges who I normally would not get to interact with is definitely a validation of being a nerd and loving all things geek. And it's going to be a good time. Last Jedi and Solo have so many great issues, from train robbing to Rico and Crimson Dawn to, you know, Han's legal justification to shoot first for the first time. And Last Jedi, you know, does Luke have a legal galaxy to save, or a legal obligation to save the galaxy from the First Order because he created Kylo Ren? Issues with Rey being negligent on Octu with her aerobic lightsaber exercises that cause a boulder to crash on caretakers. You know, there's it's just rich, and we'll have a lot of legal minds jump into this. And then there's the mock trial.
Well, I gotta ask, have you ever done a court martial before?
I have not. I'm a civil litigator. One of our attorney participants, he's a JAG officer. He just got out of the Army. He's reserved now.
Oh, and just for our listeners around the Pittsburgh area, JAG is Judge Advocate General, not JAG off. I want to be very clear about that.
Finished with officer.
Well, that and Thomas Harper lives outside of Pittsburgh, if I remember right. So he's actually goes by, and he's going to be doing a nerd night in Philadelphia next month. So Thomas helped out a lot with preparing this, as did Judge Sherino, because he also has military law experience. So Judge Sherino actually wrote the indictment, the charges against Poe. And we have that posted on our website. I'm happy to send it to you guys as well, because...
Oh, and can I just say, I love that you not only did it in English, but in Arabesh.
That was all Judge Sherino. When you look at the deep dive nerdery of, you know, the date Poe was born, and, you know, he did grow up on Yavin 4, lots of detail went into that.
Oh wow! This is just great.
I'll send you guys a preview. We can post it afterwards. But we did the way a mock trial works is we have to write witness statements, so that way the cosplayers who are playing their characters, you know, have a universe material to work with. Because we can't just say like, hey, wing it from with what you know from the movie, because that's not how it works. If you've done high school mock trial or college or law school. No, there's a defined universe of material. And with this, we hit Wikipedia hard on the Last Jedi book to get into how Poe was thinking that maybe Holdo was not all that she claimed to be. Also with Leia, going back to, you know, the comics from Shattered Empire to how Leia and Poe's mom saved Naboo from Operation Cinder.
That's right, Shara Bay.
So being in Shara taught Poe how to fly over Yavin 4. So we referenced that in the statements to give them some context. Okay. Because with Poe, Poe's a very bad boy. The prosecution has a very strong case against Poe, and Leia, as the government witness, does have some things to say, but there are strategies that the defense can use in questioning Leia to try to save Poe from being executed, because that's, in times of war, if you mutiny or do insubordination, punishment's death. So Poe could be executed for the crap that he pulled. And when you look at, hey, you got over 400 people killed because of your two stunts of not being able to listen to the older women who know what they're doing, there's going to be a lot of family members who want his head on a pike because it's all his fault. And that's really bad when you can point out, because of you hanging up on Leia, with this mindset of when you start a fight, you finish it, got an entire bomber squadron killed and at least two X-Wing pilots. So, there's a body count of over 30 people that are all on Poe because he refused to listen to Leia and hung up on her.
So basically, he's just lucky the entire resistance was decimated. Otherwise, he'd be in real trouble.
Yeah, because... we're going to have a joke about that we've convened the remaining resistance officers for the court martial here.
Yeah, because I noticed that the name of the accuser on the charge sheet is actually General Organa.
Yes, because she's left, because Holdo's dead. We could go into, a philosophical discussion that Holdo would have been right to have thrown him in the brig.
Frankly, I'm surprised she didn't have him shot on the bridge.
Yeah, because
I think she knew he was too valuable. I think she's too good a leader for that.
It's a mix because she does talk down to him, and like she's rightfully angry. You got all these people killed, dude. we're in this mess because of you, Flyboy, and so she's rightfully upset, and. On one level, there's an argument why the resistance wouldn't execute him because there's one, not enough of them left, and two, they're not the First Order; they're the good guys. But Poe should have at least been thrown into the brig for what happened, and if not that, there could have been some other options for punishment, and hopefully we'll have time during the Q&A to get into that. So again, we have detailed witness statements that are each a little over a page, and the way a mock trial works is, the prosecution offering up Leia as a fact witness, they'll do a direct examination of her, and then the defense will do a cross. Then when it's the defense's turn to put on their case in chief, they will put Poe up. Which in real life is always dangerous to put the defendant on the stand, but he has some explaining to do. And then the prosecution gets to cross him. Well, we want our cosplayers to be ready for this because they haven't gone to court. Like they haven't been either deposed or on the witness stand before. So I wrote cross examinations for both, and we're going to do remote practices with both of them, so that way they don't get a sneak peek at what the other side's actually thinking for strategy wise. And I theorized on how to attack both witnesses. With the challenge with Leia is you have to be respectful because you don't want to have a few good men scenario take place, where if you accuse the general of wrongdoing, you could end up in the stockade yourself. So. A little fun there. We're also having fun with this because the lawyers are more playful than I am normally. Like my theory on doing this is to do it straight face, and we'd wear suits. One of the moms is making us resistance jackets. We figured out the right color Dickies to get, and we ordered boots.
I was mistaken. Now this is the coolest thing ever.
I'm a colonel, so I got the colonel badge, and everyone else got major badges for for playing, you know, the role. So it's like being in the fourth grade with a mom making us costumes, and except it's with lawyers instead. So it's just seeing everyone come together and be excited, and, you know, and then the folks from the Rebel Legion who are participating with us are just so nice and so fun. And we want to put on a good show so people can understand how the law works.
Well, now, and now what I do love is the fact, I mean, because, you know, for some people getting to San Diego Comic-Con can be a bit of a chore, whether it's, you know, prohibitively, you know, because of financial means or other means. But, you did confirm that you all will be, you know, once this has been done, you're going to be putting it on YouTube and releasing an audio version as well.
Yeah. So what San Diego has rules for recording. So we filled out the paperwork to record them. And we have some folks attending who can record for us, because that's their job at the show, is to be our videographers or camera people. So I have one friend who's a photographer, and she'll play photographer. And we got others who can record. We'll put out at least one DAT, hopefully two, to get the audio from the panel. And that way we can post it in multimedia, which is a lot what we did for WonderCon. This isn't our first mock trial. At WonderCon a couple months ago, we did the droids, R2-D2 and C-3PO, suing the cantina for discrimination. And the original thought was to do it as a motion to dismiss, with the cantina saying they're not people, therefore the laws don't apply to them. And Judge Beckerman from Portland presided over that. And she suggested a different theory, where it was the droids bringing a preliminary injunction to force the cantina to stay open and serve them, which would be a higher burden to prove, but allowed us to get into more of the merits. Okay. And that one was a rip-roaring good time. That's posted on our YouTube channel, as is the audio on our podcast channel. And, you know, we had the plaintiff expert witness. Her name's Carrie Bean. She works at NASA JPL, and she built her own R2-D2. And we had her working for the Mon Calamari Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and fictionalized, because she drives the Opportunity rover, or did once that, and hopefully will again once that storm clears, and NASA's, you know, TIE fighter, the Dawn mission. And she was awesome in talking about droids and whether or not they would qualify as persons, or at least animals. And then we had the gentleman who is in charge of the Sunrider Rebel Legion down in Southern California, Sunrider Base, pardon me. He was the bartender from the cantina. And, you know, we used From the Certain Point of View book, the chapter about him, to talk about basically his bigotry towards droids, because droids killed his parents during the Clone Wars. As a lawyer, he would be the worst type of client to have, because that's like saying, well, the mob killed my family, therefore I don't allow anyone who's Italian in my restaurant. Like, that's, it's like, that's discrimination because of somebody's race. And to go, I'm going to install a droid detector and not allow anyone into the cantina who's a droid, that's discriminatory intent. So it was a good debate about public accommodation laws and whether or not they would apply to droids. We've also did, just the quick rundown, we did the mock trial of the Winter Soldier at San Diego Comic Fest, and we had expert witnesses talking about Bucky's mental state. We did a X-Men-themed one, where a fictional U.S. president issued an executive order to use sentinels to hunt, intern, or execute mutants based upon their DNA.
Oh.
And yeah, ironically, I came up with that with another lawyer prior to the election of Trump. So we looked really, really forward thinking, and and not in a good way. Not happy about that. This couple months ago, we did a competency hearing for Frankenstein's creature on whether or not he could be charged with the death of Little Maria.
This is why I love you guys.
Thank you. And last year was a hearing to prove the actual innocence of Luke Cage. and we a U.S. Marshal played Luke Cage, and he was awesome. So it was good stuff. Very good stuff.
That is too cool.
So this year, it's Star Wars.
Awesome. Now, and of course, did you mention that you were also doing one about the Defenders as well at San Diego Comic-Con?
That's Saturday night at 7:30 and room 26AB. And that one is Defending the Defenders. And we'll jump into all the Marvel shows on Netflix. And so we'll touch on a little bit with The Punisher. But the main focus is from Daredevil, because obvious reasons. Jessica Jones has lots of great legal issues. And Luke Cage has a couple big ones as well. Season 2 has some phenomenal ones, and that could actually take over the presentation if we really wanted to. So with all the shows to juggle, we have to make hard choices. And Iron Fist has a couple good ones. And let's see now. Did I miss? Oh, and of course, Defenders itself. There's a couple great legal issues from there. So that panel has a defense attorney from Oregon, judges Nahara and Sherino are on it, because again, having a judge from Brooklyn come to Comic-Con with us, it'd be silly not to have him on the panel about the superheroes in New York. I mean, like we would do that faux pas. And Thomas, the JAG officer, and Christine Peake, who's a civil rights attorney from San Jose, she's defending Poe, and on this panel as well, and it's her mom making the costumes. So
I love it. You keep it a family affair. That's great.
It's just we're gonna need to get some nice stuff for her mom. I don't know what, but we're gonna have to do some hard research to make sure we get sufficient thank you gifts for her, because that's just like, I would not do that normally. I would play this straight.
Well, in the interim to the start, you know, of San Diego Comic-Con, where can people find you and the Legal Geeks online?
So thelegalgeeks.com is our website, and Twitter the same, as is Instagram, as is Tumblr, as is also Pinterest. And you know, come check us out. We will be at the show. We're gonna have a great time. Really appreciate you guys, you know, connecting today. And again, love what you guys do, and want to hear what you guys want to talk about with the latest in Star Wars comics.
Well, as you know, as you and I had discussed in the in our messages back and forth when we were trying to get you on the show, you know, we'd mentioned that you know, Poe Dameron is ending, of course, but, and you had said you're a little behind on some of your comics, but I was just kind of curious, what are your thoughts on the Law and Dr. Aphra in terms of her looting priceless archaeological objects?
I love her. I loved her when the Vader comic began and the two droids, and that's one of the Hasbro exclusives they have, is that three action figure set, and I want that bad boy. whatever's the right acronym there. But yes, her work with Vader and looting things, it's a little Indiana Jones-esque. And the way antiquity laws would kick in would kind of shut her down, because you're not supposed to go around doing that. unless a society is completely extinct, like Morag at the beginning of Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, you would need basically an extinct civilization in order to avoid any true problems, and I mean that on a planetary scale, so there's no one left to claim, hey, you're violating our ancestors, because we frown on that sort of thing, because it can easily turn into grave robbing, or, you know, you look at the rules that and laws that Egypt has, with, like, they don't want to be pilfered, and we don't want her doing that either, but she's the bad girl who's just absolutely a ton of fun.
There's no arguing with that. No arguing with that whatsoever. So do you think that, cause you know, right now in the Dr. Aphra comic book series, she is in, I don't want to say the employ, that's probably a nice way of putting it, but she is in the employ of 000 and BT1. And of course, 000 is now, now runs a crime syndicate, but, but since he is just a droid, can he be held liable for criminal activity?
Great question. And it'd be a test. You know, the issue with droids and what they can do and not do, you know, on one level, you could view them as pets. And thus, the people who own the pet would be responsible for their wrongdoing, much like if there's a dog bite case. When you get to, like, you know, IG-88, who's sentient enough to be a bounty hunter, you know, you could say, like, well, that contract's not enforceable. But you know that would end badly. You know, like, you're not going to breach a contract with IG-88.
No, and I imagine any lawyer trying to go after IG-88 would probably find themselves disintegrated under mysterious circumstances.
It's a bad life choice. You know, so when you have a droid running a crime syndicate, golly, that's a complicated one, because to invoke a little Jurassic Park, law would find a way. You know, we would find a way to prosecute him. And, you know, on the blog, we've toyed with, like, you know, robot law on how to deal with, you know, whether it was the show Almost Human, which had some wonderful legal issues where robots go bad and who's liable, or the home defense system that is killing people. And it's a tricky one because, you know, like, the prosecution would have to prove the droid's alive in order to prosecute. If they want to skip that and just go right to, you know, it's like a rabid animal, we're going to go put it down, you kind of skip the judicial process at that point. So, a couple ways to look at it.
Cool. Well, let me ask you a very generic question about the comics.
Uh-huh.
How do you like them?
I really like them. When the Star Wars comic first came out and, you know, we just had issue 50, you know, I thought, like, I feel joy reading this. It makes me feel like a kid. And both Vader comics have been in that camp as well of, you know, they're well-written. Granted, any storyline can have its ups and downs. But I'm generally happy with them. And I thought issue 50 of Star Wars was fantastic.
Okay. Yeah, because we're going to be discussing that in a little while, which leads to my next question about Darth Vader. Charles Soule writes Volume 2 of Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
Charles Soule is an attorney
and a good one, immigration lawyer.
Quite a good one. At what point are you going to be able to lasso him in and put Darth Vader on mock trial?
So we've kicked that around. I did a blog post on how to defend Vader and whether or not the insanity defense would apply for the dark side made me do it. And with Vader and Anakin, those were all bad life choices. And it would be very hard to defend Vader. Thomas Harper also did, you know, a post about that. If Vader had survived Return of the Jedi, you know, Luke saying, like, hey, my dad's good now. People are going to have a tough time with that. And, you know, and then there's an issue between, you know, there's a difference between, like, redemption and atonement. And like, you look at guys who are former neo-Nazis and the way that, you know, that, you know, like, forming a group like Life After Hate, trying to go out and help others. You know, Vader would have problems with, you know, like, you killed a room full of children, you killed a village. You know, you killed sand people for fun because you had, you know, free time on Tatooine. Like, all of that's bad. And defending him would be horrific because you're just going to try playing it down to some really aggressive community service. How do you get him not executed? Because, you know, I'm not a fan of the death penalty. Like, it only should be used in extreme circumstances. Vader would fall into that category, unfortunately. Like, same with Tarkin. You don't blow up a planet to prove a point to instill fear in people. Like, that's, you know, that's full-on war crime, and that's the sort of thing you hang somebody for. Hmm. So Vader would be a tough one, as would Kylo Ren. There's a theory that judges last year posed about drug addiction can be a form of the insanity defense if it destroys your ability to know right from wrong, or, you know, you're completely motivated by the addiction. And thus they pose the question whether or not the dark side can be an addiction, and therefore a form of the insanity defense. Well, in Anakin Skywalker's case, that's a long line of bad decisions he made. You know, I want to save my pregnant secret wife, so therefore I'll go kill a room full of kids. That's all on him. Like, that was a choice. And even if some of his decisions were based upon rage, fueled by the dark side, there's enough that weren't. You know, I mean, after his mom died, killing that village, you could argue insanity, temporary insanity, because of the stress of his mom dying. But so many of the others, they're just choices. Now, you get to Kylo Ren, you know, and you just focusing on Force Awakens, those are choices. And, like, he literally plays the role of William Cowley on Jakku. And if you're, that name doesn't ring a bell.
Oh, wow, I never thought about that. Yeah, the My Lai Massacre.
Yeah, because Lieutenant William Cowley says, kill them all. At least that was his war crimes trial. It's the exact thing that Kylo Ren does. And then Phasma orders it. So she's in that link as well. And Finn's the only stormtrooper to not take aim at innocent civilians.
Wow.
You know, and to compare it to real life, you know, there was the, I think the British documentary, 4 Hours at My Lai. I saw it in high school. And I'm pretty sure that's the right documentary. But there was only one U.S. soldier who said, screw this, I'm not shooting people. And he threw down his weapon and walked off. He's like, this is wrong. There was one helicopter crew that went, screw this, we're the good guys, and put themselves in position, you know, to protect the villagers. And the pilot told his gunner to open fire on the U.S. troops if they tried shooting at the fleeing Vietnamese. Kylo Ren is in the same position as William Cowley, and it doesn't matter how nice his hair is or how nice his eyes are, he's a butcher and should be prosecuted for that, and he can't say, oh, I was upset my uncle, you know, was over me with a lightsaber, thus I decided to kill younglings and pursue a life of the dark side. It's like, those are all choices, horrible choices, and it doesn't matter what else happens. He can't escape that past. That past isn't going to die. It's going to haunt him, and he should be prosecuted for it.
Well, on that positive note, thank you.
So I am great at children's parties, and... I know how to bring joy to others, but yeah, that's a tough one.
That's good though. I love how you, because now I'm gonna have to be thinking about that for a couple of days. So
it's just, you know, when talking to folks who, I mean, now granted, Last Jedi made Kylo Ren so wonderfully complicated, because prior to, you know, Force Awakens, he's just a gatekeeper, mean fan. Like that's all that character is. And Rian Johnson gave him depth and complexity that I wish we started with that level of depth and complexity, because that's what Anakin Skywalker should have been in the prequels.
It's going to be amazing to see what JJ does with him in episode 9.
So. Agreed. Take the mask off, because Adam Driver really can act and is super engaging. So let's see how he does as the Supreme Leader and what happens.
Well, the thirst is real. That's for sure. So yeah.
It's, you know, while I might sound like I'm tearing something down by, you know, with legal analysis, I really love this stuff. And it's a great foil to discuss how the law actually works.
Gosh. All right, Josh, thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us what is probably going to be probably the highlight of Star Wars Day at San Diego Comic Con.
That's very kind of you.
I am really looking forward to hearing the audio of this. And okay. One question though. This is the question I forgot to ask, and I should have asked this because I imagine a lot of our listeners are going to be wondering this. Now, while parts of the mock trial are scripted, with the witness statements and whatnot, I mean, the verdict is not, right?
Correct. So, and it's.
It could go either way.
It could go either way, and it's quasi-scripted. You know, because we give a fact pattern to each witness for them to know and be familiar with. The way the lawyers phrase the questions and the arguments they construct, that's not. I mean, like, they're prepared, but you don't know what's going to happen on cross-examination. And, for example, at the droid mock trial, the defense tried getting Carrie to give a political type answer, and Carrie wasn't going to give him what he wanted, and fired back that, as a government employee, I can't give a political answer. And it shot him out of the sky. It was awesome. So stuff like that can happen. So there's, is this going to air before Comic-Con or after?
Oh, this will air on Wednesday. So this will air well before Comic-Con.
Okay. So there's, I won't give away trial strategy then, but there's a way to save Poe. I honestly believe there's a defense way to save Poe, but require going after Leia.
You can't go after Leia. She leads the resistance.
She leads the resistance, but she made several bad decisions. Poe, you know, like the time difference between Force Awakens to Last Jedi is hours, days. And in that time, Poe was captured and tortured on the finalizer. He's then put back on active duty. That was a mistake. That's the area to focus on. That man should not have been in the cockpit.
Okay.
I'll buy it.
That's the snowball's chance in hell of saving him. So whether or not it works, but that's the theory to go with of, now granted, Leia's counter to that was, I watched my planet get blowed up and still held everything together to go save the day. And I saw that strength in him. That's the counter to it. And depending how the witnesses handle it is, you know, will determine the outcome of the case. If the lawyers go with that theory, there are other theories they can go with.
Well, just so long, at some point during the court martial, somebody does make the declaration for the record that Chewbacca is a Wookiee.
Yes. And if only one of the attorneys was a Wookiee on the defense side, we really have something special. But...
Josh, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. We've got to have you back on here to do some comic talk as well.
My pleasure. Love you guys, and thank you for having me.
Anytime. Cheers, mate, and good luck, and may the best argument win.
The law will be with you, always.
Yes! What have we got coming next week?
Oh, well, gosh. Funny you asked that. I happen to know. We have some really good stuff coming out this Wednesday. First and foremost, on Tuesday, we should have the Rogue One adaptation hardcover, which is collecting the Rogue One miniseries adaptation, as well as the Cassian and K2SO one-shot. So look for that July 10th, I believe. On Wednesday, July 11th, we have Darth Vader 18, and it's called Bad Ground. And it is a single story that's going to tide us over to Fortress Vader. Or Vader's Fortress, or whatever it is. And it opens up. It's got Tarkin hunting Vader, which is going to be very interesting.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a lot of fun book.
And I think that it's going to stem from something in the recent Mon Cala story, because there was a couple of panels where Tarkin was, asking Vader for a favor. So yes. And Charles Soule, actually, he tweeted today. And we're not actually recording on a Sunday. We're recording on a Monday for once. He said that there was a reason for the time jump after Vader number 12, and that reason should become clear as Fortress Vader starts in issue 19 and 20. So issue 18, though, I think it's going to be sort of like just kind of setting by itself. But it'll be interconnected. But again, there's just something. There was something in the Mon Cala arc. If memory serves, and I remember talking about it on the episode we did about it. It was like, Tarkin was something to the effect of, you would be doing me a favor. You would be doing me a courtesy and something I will repay you for later.
I remember. And there was an indication that I'll make it worth your while.
Yeah. So it's just, I don't know, it'd be kind of cool. So, and then of course we have Thrawn Part 6. This is the final issue of Thrawn. So we will see what price Arinda Price has to pay and what goes on with Eli Vonto and Thrawn. And, you know, I'm a little bummed that Thrawn is ending because I think this is a miniseries that should probably have gone 12 issues.
I think they could have done that and filled up the space just fine.
Oh, very much so.
Wouldn't have felt as rushed.
But don't forget, we also get the new Thrawn Alliances novel later this month from Timothy Zahn. So
excellent.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. And that's going to be, you know, Thrawn encountering Darth Vader. You know, of course, he's encountered Darth Vader before when he was Anakin Skywalker. So it should be really cool. And then I'm not sure, don't hold me to this, but I think Star Wars Volume 3, the hardcover, is out this week, but it may have been pushed back until next week.
It's still showing up on Comics List. It's coming out this week.
Yeah, yeah. So I've not been able to get a hard confirmation, though. So it may be out Tuesday or Wednesday. It may not be. We'll see.
All right, so that's going to do it for this edition of Comics with Kenobi. We will be back next week with all the comics that are fit to read. And until next time, Matt, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And may the Force be with you.
Always. Cool.
Okay, before we go, let me record. Comics with Kenobi's theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
Don't wanna see us running the galaxy. Don't wanna see us running the galaxy. Don't wanna see us running the galaxy. Don't wanna see us running the galaxy.
Bud, stop peeing!